Thank you very much, Edith. Thank you, Nicole. Thank you, Anna. Thank you, Edith, for this invitation. And I may say I am especially deeply moved by this invitation to speak at this meeting in the honor of François Jacob. Since, as many of you know, he was my first mentor. And being a young student, the first mentors have a deep influence in their evolution. And indeed, François had a very profound influence in the evolution of my scientific career. First of all, we met by chance, and this was due to Jacques Monod, who also I met by chance. After being in Brussels for 2 months in De Duve and Jean Brachet laboratory, and there I wanted to do the chemistry of embryonic development. This may be surprising. I was not influenced by François Jacob. That was my spontaneous idea. Then, when I visited the lab at the Pasteur Institute, Jacques Monod told me, you have to abandon your project, and you have to work with bacteria. I must say I was not happy at all by that. And then Jacques Monod said to me, well, why don't you read the thesis of François Jacob? And think about it. Well, it took for me 3 months, it's unbelievable at this stage, to read the thesis and to say, yes, I am going to shift and go to bacteria. So the most amazing fact is that willing to do the chemistry of embryonic development, I shifted to bacteria. And I may say that this was a very good choice. And the few weeks I spent with him, somebody showed already this slide, but he was like that. And when I entered the lab in the attic, at the second floor of the Pasteur Institute, he was actually working extremely actively by himself on isolating bacterial colonies and doing genetics with E. coli. And he trained me to do this kind of experiments. He was himself doing extremely quickly and at an extraordinary rhythm. Well, I was a bit slower, but I did some experiment on transferring genes, the lac operon, it was not yet the operon, the lac genes, from Escherichia coli to Salmonella. This was some kind of first genetically modified organism. And then the idea was to try to see whether the genes of the lac operon were expressing the same way in Salmonella and in E. coli, and the fact is that they do express the same way. So this was an extraordinary training for the first few weeks I entered in the laboratory. And then came the moment where I had to choose my subject for a thesis work. And both François Jacob and Jacques Monod said, why don't you work on constitutive mutation, on positive induction instead of repression and so on. But I said, well, I don't want to work on the same topic as you are working. I want to have some independence topic. And François said, well, I saw at a meeting Edwin Umbarger, and he presented to us some work on feedback inhibition in biochemical pathways in bacteria. I'd say, this is exactly what I want to do. So he, in fact, was at the origin of all my life research, and I embarked on the study of ferrin deaminase, as you shall see in a minute. Now, this is just to illustrate the have a feeling about the atmosphere in the laboratory of François Jacob and Jacques Monod, and of course you recognize François here, Jacques Monod, François Gros, George Cohen, Sarah Rapkin. And I was just reading a compliment for the 50th anniversary of Jacques Monod, and at that time I had already started to work on Threonidae amines, and the topic of my presentation will be to give you some kind of overview of the research I did from the concept of allosteric interaction, which emerged from the studies with Threonidae amines, up to the allosteric modulation of higher main functions. And this is the pathway of isoleucine biosynthesis in E. coli. And the first enzyme, threonine deaminase, is feedback inhibited by isoleucine. This was the main discovery of Edwin Umberger. And the question which was raised by this observation was that this enzyme was inhibited by a compound which was quite different from threonine. So the question was, is there a specific mechanism involved in this feedback regulation which does not exist in other enzymes or the pathway? I had this idea in mind, and one way to test it was to try to uncouple the feedback regulation from the activity of the enzyme. And here you can see that heating of the crude preparation of the enzyme at high temperature, you can see that the enzymatic activities almost stay constant, but that the feedback inhibition disappear. Now, Umberger had also shown that there were some cooperative effects for the substrate and inhibitor binding, and everything was lost altogether during this desensitization process. So there was an uncoupling of both feedback regulation cooperative interaction, and similar results were observed in parallel by John Gerhardt and Arthur Pardee with aspartate transcarbamylase, where the feedback inhibitor was CTP and the substrate aspartate. You see the wild differences between the substrate and the feedback inhibitor. So in a paper, Jacques Monod asked me to write after this finding for a meeting in Cold Spring Harbor. Then I proposed two models to account for this relationship between the feedback inhibitor and the substrate of the enzyme. First, the classical steric hindrance mechanism, I would say, overlapping model, or have two sites different from each other, one for the substrate, threonine, and the other for the feedback inhibitor, isoleucine. And in the discussion of this paper, I suggested that this was the right model. Jacques Monod did not wish to sign this paper. This was my work. I think this is rare now. Mentors usually co-sign with their students, but he let me sign it by myself. But in the discussion of the meeting, together with François Jacob, they proposed the word allosteric to describe this model. And I may say that it's much better to have the new word allosteric than no overlapping, which was not so attractive for the media, if I may say. So this is the birth date of the word allosteric interaction as indirect interaction between topographically distinct sites mediated by a conformation change. I emphasize the word indirect interaction. So subsequently, in my thesis work, I investigated the relationship between the cooperative effects found for the substrate during desensitization between the loss of regulatory properties. And this was also observed by other workers who had similar results, and also very much inspired by the work of Max Perutz with hemoglobin, who had investigated the cooperative effect between oxygen molecule on the four hemes of hemoglobin and shown that the four hems are indeed topographically distinct and therefore that there are allosteric interactions taking place in hemoglobin. And this is the model that we propose together with Jeffrey Wyman to account for this data from my essentially from my thesis work, this from Max Perut's work, and instead of using a very simple Meidand scheme, which is that when a ligand binds to a molecule, then the molecule changes and the molecule have a new function. Instead of having that, what we propose is that in fact the protein may spontaneously exist under two conformations. And this in the absence of ligand. So this was a radical change in the way people were actually looking at signal transduction. In fact, signal transduction is a built-in, spontaneous conformation transition which exists in the absence of ligand. And what the ligand do is to shift the equilibrium in favor of an active or an inactive conformation. Now, the interesting thing is that it's a very simple-minded model. And to account for the relationship between the cooperative effect and the signal transduction mechanism, of course, you can see here that we propose that allosteric proteins are made up of subunits. They are oligomers. Remember this because I think this is still a very up-to-date important issue. They make oligomers which are symmetrical and that minimum two-state model with two symmetrical states would account for this complex kinetic property. So this was the model. Now this model has a lot of success, and quite interestingly, it went up, down, and since about 1990, then the citations are going up, and the number of citations per year now are much higher than it was 30 years ago. It's an amazing resurrection, if I may say, of this scheme. Now, in my thesis work at the end, I must say I wanted to get out of the bacteria and go back to my first love and propose that possibly this kind of mechanism was taking place in the brain. That in synaptic transmission, there would be some protein, which would be allosteric protein, and mediate signal transduction at the synapse. And therefore, I decided to try to work on a receptor, but at that time, there was no receptor. So the first thing was to try to isolate the receptor. The most classical receptor was the nicotinic acetylcholine receptor at the neuromuscular junction. And the organ which is the richest in a single species of acetylcholine receptor is not the brain. It is the electric organ of a fish which had been identified by David Nachmanson in the 1930s when he was actually working in France. So I spent a few months with David Nachmanson, practiced the physiology of the electric organ, and then by chance had the opportunity, again serendipity, to meet Chi-Wan Li, who was a pharmacologist from Taiwan who had been working on snake venoms. You see the relationship between a snake and electric fish are really something that one can hardly conceive or imagine, that in fact this snake venom toxin selectively bound to the receptor from the fish electric organ, which could then be purified and observed by electron microscopy. This is a postsynaptic membrane of the electric organ synapse. You can see these receptors with five subunits here in the electrophorus purified. And the protein could be sequence, purified, and cloned, and the full sequencing achieved in several laboratories, in NUMA laboratories, in Heinemann, and in our laboratories. So this subunit of the heteropentamer from the neuromuscular junction, look with hydrophilic domain, hydrophobic transmembrane domain, and the cytoplasmic domain. So is it an allosteric protein? The answer is yes, of course. You can see here on the high resolution electron microscopy structure, which was developed by Nagel and Wynn with the Fish electric organ. You can see that we have here the acetylcholine binding site. So there are five acetylcholine binding sites in brain nicotinic receptor, only two in the muscle receptor. And you can see here the ion channel, which is under the control of the acetylcholine binding to this site, and the distance is about 60 angstrom between the acetylcholine site and the ion channel, and the distance between acetylcholine site is about 40 angstrom. So we are, in fact, dealing with a beautiful transmembrane protein where the active site and the regulatory site, active site, the ion channel, the regulatory site, the acetylcholine binding site, are topographically distinct. So the issue was to try to identify the mechanism of this relationship between these acetylcholine binding site and the ion channel to identify the conformational change which is mediated by this transmembrane protein, which is, I would say, a model of signal transduction in the nervous system. Well, I did not like so much bacteria, but we came back to it. And in fact, a very interesting observation was made by Tasnim and his group. I read the paper as a referee, immediately accepted it. They were finding that in bacteria, sequences which were related to the nicotinic receptor were present on some of these bacterial species. And after the paper being accepted, I asked Pierre-Jean Coringer, who was a senior scientist in my laboratory, to try to isolate one of these receptors from the sequences which were initially found by Tasmin. And the answer is clear here. The receptor could be expressed. And it is actually gated by low pH, as you can see here. And the organization of the molecule is very similar to that of the eukaryotic brain receptors, somewhat simplified, as you can see here. And again, as François Jacob has said many times, you saw that in the interview this afternoon, there is a conservation of structure which is taking place from bacteria to human, and here is an absolutely characteristic type. So this is the structure of the Gloeobacter violaceus receptor, which has been published in 2009 with Pierre-Jean Coringer and Marc Delarue. And you can recognize here the extracellular domain, which carries the ligand binding sites. Some of them have now been identified clearly. The ion channel, which is here plugged by the thing. And also, what you can see here is that there is no cytoplasmic loop, and that here, again, there is a detergent plug, which shows that, in fact, the ion goes through the protein along this ion channel. Now, of course, one could have the resting and active state of the receptor. And as you can see here, we can compare the molecular organization of the closed and open state of this Gloeobacter receptor. And again, the work of Marc Delarue and Pierre-Jean Coringer. The orthosteric site here is located at at the boundary between subunits, and you can see that one can go from the closed to the open conformation through two kind of motion. One which is some kind of blooming or unblooming, and the other a twisting. And this is just to illustrate it in this diapositive, where here is unblooming and twisting, and so on and so forth. So we have here, in fact, the allosteric transition, which mediates signal transduction in this receptor channel. And from the data we have now from other receptor, from eukaryotes, from other groups, the transition, which has been analyzed in particular by Marco Secchini from Martin Karplus laboratory, are very similar. Now, the other aspect which I want to emphasize is that not only this is an allosteric protein which undergoes this transition from the closed to open state, but this allosteric transition can be modulated by ligand binding to sites which are not the neurotransmitter binding site, not the ion channel. Here, a site, for instance, for calcium, another one for the vermifuge ivermectin, and so on and so forth. So there are, in fact, allosteric modulatory sites which are present in this protein and which are of importance for pharmacology, as you shall see. Here, the evidence for the calcium ion modulation of the alpha 7 brain nicotinic receptor, and you can see that calcium ion increase the frequency of acetylcholine receptor channel openings. One can dissect the site for calcium, and where is it found? It's a site which is topographically distinct from the acetylcholine binding site, but as the site at the boundary between subunits. Now, the case of this vermifuge ivermectin is especially interesting, since this compound has been used to cause relaxing effects on the worms, but also, interestingly, the cows, which have eaten ivermectin, in fact, their dejections are no longer being eliminated by insects, because ivermectin kills also insects. And the idea that perhaps it acts on the nervous system of insects, and why not on the alpha 7 receptor from vertebrate brain? Here is the dramatic effect of ivermectin. And the interesting finding is that when you look at the effect of mutation in the transmembrane domain, then you find that there is a dramatic loss of effect of ivermectin. Same thing for general anesthetics, which in fact are used, as you know, in operations, and are also binding to the GLIC receptor, and where mutation in the transmembrane domain alter the response. So this is the site for this general anesthetics, ivermectin, propofol and desuran, and very interestingly, the ivermectin binding site is located in the same territory as another quite active pharmacological agent, ethanol, in strains of GLIC. So we have here for calcium in the extracellular domain, for ivermectin, general anesthetics, and ethanol in the transmembrane domain, some sites which regulate the efficacy of synaptic transmission and which are potential sites for the design of pharmacological agent. And very interestingly, when you look at the conformational transition between resting and open conformation, you find that the organization of the allosteric site for calcium and the allosteric site for ivermectin change during the allosteric transition, and then one is led to this kind of model, where here you can see that the conformation of the receptor change during the transition from resting to active, that the active state is stabilized by agonist, but also by positive allosteric modulators, which stabilize this state, and this inactive state being stabilized by negative allosteric modulators and antagonists like the snake venom toxin. So we have a very simple scheme for the design of drugs, which is based not on a rigid, unique site for agonists and antagonists, but in the balance between conformation, between active and open conformation, with different stereospecificity for pharmacological ligand. Now I will close on one observation, which how far can we go with kind of scheme? So I talk about ligand-gated ion channel, about the acetylcholine receptor. Of course, this is valid for the GABA receptor, for glutamate receptor in cenorhabditis, and so on and so forth, and many brain receptors. But can we generalize this concept to other kind of regulatory proteins? And I decide to close about transcription factors, since they were evoked by different speakers this morning, and of course by François Jacob with the LAC repressor. So very briefly, we tried with Igor Tsigelnin in San Diego to try to modelize gene expression during the development of the cerebral cortex of the rat, and to make a long story short, looking at correlated gene expression maps, we proposed that, in fact, there were transcription factors which are regulating these transcription maps, and more that there is, in fact, a nested hierarchy of transcription factors which are involved in the development of the cerebral cortex. And that's where the link became established with the receptors, is that, in fact, transcription factors are allosteric proteins which bind to DNA, and also which may bind to other factors like hormones for nuclear receptors, or simply for regular transcription factors. One may design compounds which, in fact, prevent the dimerization of these transcription factors, and which could, in fact, play a role at different level of the expression of this transcription factor during cortex development. Just to illustrate that such compounds do exist and that they may have a very significant effect here on glioma cells in culture. And you see that these modulators of transcription factors, allosteric modulators of transcription, can indeed regulate gene expression. And now there are a total of 91 allosteric modulators which are available as medicinal drugs. So we think that this is a new orientation for drug design, not only orthosteric drug design, but allosteric drug design. And I may thank Marc Delarue, Pierre-Jean Coringer, Igor Tsigelny for collaboration and all my collaborators. And I would like to close with François, and thank him for the original idea he had to suggest to work on feedback regulation, and his encouragement throughout the years, and also by the discussion I had with him between art and science. And in La Souris, La Mouche et l'Homme, I may quote him about art and science. Nous vivons dans un monde créé par notre cerveau avec de continuelles allées et venues entre le réel et l'imaginaire. Peut-être l'artiste prend-il plus de celui-ci, le réel, l'imaginaire, le scientifique plus de celui-là, le réel. C'est simplement une affaire de proportion, non pas de nature. Je vous remercie.